For Marlowe, reel two.
My father left at the beginning of April, and we were waiting for our passports. In fact, the Germans started moving west, and the news was that they were going into Holland and Belgium, and my grandparents became worried that my mother and I would get stuck somewhere on the way. I don't quite know what discussions took place, I wasn't involved, but finally, my mother decided that she would stay put. So we never left. The next few months, I'm not really conscious of anything special happening. I'm sure a lot of things did, but again, I was too young to be involved. In September or October, we had to move into the ghetto. My grandparents managed to get two rooms in a flat in Hjelma Street. It was a flat of an engineer and his wife, I cannot remember their names. My grandparents' cook had to leave, so suddenly my grandmother took over housekeeping. For the first time in her life, had to share the kitchen with somebody else. I was quite young, so I was making too much noise. And generally, the atmosphere in the flat was very unpleasant. The people whom we shared with had never had any children. They found my presence unsettling. I have omitted to say that a few months before, somebody whom my mother knew many, many years before, and this is Stanisława Wedecka, V-E-D-E-C-K-A.
Sorry, could you say that again?
V-E-D-A-C-K-A. Her daughter was in a nursery with my brother. And my mother and she attended together some art classes. She turned up one day and expressed her regret at what was happening and offered her help in whatever way she could. And this lady looked after us all through the war. While we were living in Hjelma Street, there was a wall in the courtyard separating the ghetto from the other side. And she used to come and throw food over that wall from the Polish side. I can't remember how long it was before the Germans decided to reduce the size of the ghetto, and where we were, which was on the border, so to speak, became the Polish side, and we had to move. The congestion in the ghetto at that point worsened, and we were unable to find anywhere where we could have two rooms. So my grandparents took a room in one flat. My mother and I went to a flat in Pańska Street, which again was on the border, so that there was a wall right in front of our windows. And we lived there right to the time we left the ghetto. There was another family there with a daughter of about 18 called Frances, Franka. But again, I cannot remember their surname. It was quite traumatic living there, because at night, smugglers would come over the wall, but mainly under the wall. There were small children. They used to loosen a break in the wall, and that was a way of supplying ghettos with food. So there were just little boys with burlap bags bringing food in, and you could hear the Germans shooting at them. Sometimes you found a body in the street in the morning, sometimes you didn't. I remember one night when there was terrible hammering on the front gate of the block of flats, and everybody was absolutely petrified because it was obvious it was the Germans coming in. And the next morning we heard that a journalist, I think a friend of my uncle, a Mr. Warszawski, and his father-in-law were taken out by the Germans and shot. We used to go to my grandparents for most meals. And to an extent, life was very busy for me. My mother was trying to keep me as occupied as possible. So I was going to a small group, with a small group of children. We had a teacher who used to come, and Miss Dorothy Morgenstern, who was the most wonderful teacher and way ahead of her time. I remember writing essays in the form of stories, doing little experiments, working out all the math formulas ourselves. And there were, I think, I remember two names of the children who were with me. One was Eliza Regierer, the other one was Dunja Boben, whose mother was an artist and whose father had been killed, as it transpired, in Katyn. This lady, Mrs. Boben, took us for art classes. In addition, I was taking English lessons from a lady whose name I cannot remember, but who graduated from Oxford. And then gave me my first foundation of English, nursery rhymes and so on. There were no gardens or parks in the ghetto. The only one there was attached to a church in Płock Żydowski. It was a sort of parish complex, with a parish hall and some almshouses where we had a lot of friends. In the complex lived a very famous Professor Hirschfeld with his wife and a daughter who was paralyzed by polio. There were other people. There was a dentist, Mr. Weinstein, with a daughter, Janina. There was a lawyer, Mr. Nowogródzki, who was in the Jewish police. I think I have omitted to say that in February 1940, before my father left, we converted and I was baptized in the Catholic Church. So we used to go to the church there, and I used to play in the little garden with all the other children. At that time, although the ghetto was fully enclosed, in Leszno Street there were the locals. The locals had two entrances, one from the Jewish side and one from the Polish side. And although it was supposed to be guarded, somehow Mrs. Wadecka, in the summer of 1941, met my mother and I in the locals and took me out on holiday. So I spent some weeks in the Polish countryside, which was very nice, except that I managed to contract measles, which made it just slightly awkward. When I returned to the ghetto, I had another shock. I had put a little basket of wild strawberries for my mother and my grandparents. And as we were walking home, we were attacked by what were called snatchers. They were people who were on the point of starvation. And whenever they saw anybody walking with what could be food, they would jump at you and not catch or grab with their hands, but literally go in with their teeth. And my little basket of wild strawberries was taken away. I was extremely upset. The general environment in the ghetto was very alien to me. The classy Hasidic Jews, the language, a lot of people speaking Yiddish, which I had never heard before, or speaking German. People dying in the street, seeing bodies covered with newspaper in the morning before they were collected, or not even covered. All this added to a feeling of strangeness and in a way of not belonging. I remember there was a bridge separating or joint, rather linking the little ghetto from what was called this big ghetto. Through that street went trams with normal people. We had to walk over the bridge, and there was a gate there. And it was known that you had to be very careful when a certain German soldier was on guard, because he would take pot shots at anybody who took his fancy. And so this sort of life, when in November, at the end of November 1941, my grandfather contracted typhoid and died within a week. This was a terrible shock to me because I adored him. He was a very, very gentle man, a learned man, full of kindness, to whom patients were all. He was completely uninterested in money and just devoted to his profession. I remember going into his study with all the books, which all stayed behind when he left for the ghetto, and seeing very great volumes of Press Medical on his desk and him writing articles. And always his great kindness. I remember coming to say goodbye to him, and by coincidence, a letter from my father somehow arrived at that point in time. And I remember my grandmother saying, "Ludwig, Barbara's come to say hello to me." And that was the last time I saw him. I went to his funeral, and I remember the speeches, but there weren't as many people as there would have been because we had to have a permit to leave the ghetto, to go to the Jewish cemetery, which was outside the walls. After that, one of my mother's sisters moved in with my grandmother, and he remained in our flat. And so things continued till July 1942.
How about your sort of daily life, you know, the heating, water, food?
I will be honest, I was never hungry. Often I had food which I didn't like, and I remember a very unpleasant contretemps with my grandmother when she produced a stew of Swedes. And I took one look at it and said, "That's suitable for pigs and not for humans." And that was not accepted very kindly. But I wasn't hungry. Yes, the food wasn't what it would have been or what it used to be. We had ersatz tea and ersatz coffee made up of acorns and marmalade made with very little sugar out of carrots. But other than that, I can't remember. But what was terrible was the fact that we had no light after, I think it was 8 o'clock. We had to have carbide lamps, which were smelly and difficult to light, very generally unpleasant. There was very little heating, and I developed terrible frostbites, which one can still see the scars on my fingers and the swelling of my joints.
Yes, I can
and
see.
And they were both on my hands and my feet. So that was very, very unpleasant. But apart from that, I was pretty well occupied throughout the day. I was going from my classes to my art classes. I used to make a lot of things because I enjoyed sort of making tissue flowers and I don't know where we got the materials from, but I was kept very busy. And if not, I went to the little garden behind the church.
Could I ask you a little more about this sort of alien atmosphere that you found within the ghetto? Did this mean that you didn't relate to the sort of Jewish...
No, I wondered really what I was doing there. I really felt that there were strangers. There were people from another planet. Some of them I couldn't communicate with. They looked different from us. That was the sort of the crowd in the street. They were loud. They were quarreling among themselves. I had the feeling that they were resentful, but I was always cleanly dressed, and I was probably reasonably well fed under the circumstances. It was just strange and very different from what I had been used to. But of course, the people I was mostly with were others like myself. Now we come to July 1942, when the Germans started putting up posters asking people to report to the Umschlagplatz to be taken east. And I remember discussions and various people saying, well, that's all right, that can't be worse, it will be better. And they were offering bread and marmalade. And in fact, my teacher decided to go with her went her niece, Elizabeth. And of course, I don't know what happened to them. I'm sure they are dead. Then there was spoke that if you were working for the German war effort, you would be all right. So they started setting up workshops, and people got or both certificates that they were working for the Germans. And one workshop was set up in the parish hall behind the church, where my mother, my aunt, and my grandmother all had passes saying that they were employed there. But the danger for me was greater because I couldn't work. I was too young. I wasn't quite 12 at the time. So my mother was trying to work something out. But, I mean, that again, sort of discussion I wasn't involved with. And every day you heard about people being deported, whole streets being cleared out, and all sorts of rumors going on. And then one day, Mr. Nowogródzki, who was in the Jewish police, told my mother that the next day, the parish area formed part of the designated area for clearance. And it was assumed that those in the workshop would be safe, but I wouldn't. We spent that night in his flat within the complex, and very early in the morning, he took us on a rickshaw, which was a means of communication within the ghetto, was so bicycle, a little couple of seats on a bicycle. We were taken to the police headquarters, where he said we could spend the day with his wife in safety. Before we left, I think it was about 5 in the morning, my mother said, told me to go and say goodbye to my grandmother, who came out of this workshop, and I still remember, we stood behind the church, and I said, Mummy said to say goodbye. And my grandmother took a gold bracelet, which I later found out had been burnt specially as currency, and which weighed 0.5 kilo, and handed it to me, and said, take this. And I said, Mummy didn't tell me to take anything, and I handed it back to her. We went on in our rickshaw to the police headquarters, and on the way, a column of Ukrainian SS men passed us, going towards the area we had come from. But they were very disciplined. They were not interested in people passing them in the street. They were going to a designated area for clearance. Well, we spent the whole day with the other families of the police, and in the evening, after the action was finished, because that's what they were called, actions, we went back. When we arrived there, the place was deserted. That workshop had no one there, but it was alive. You had the needle stuck halfway through a piece of material. You had a potato in the kitchen with a knife through the skin. You could feel the people there, but there was no one. And suddenly, a trap door in the floor opened, and an old woman peeked out and said, have they gone? We all looked at her. Doing here? She said, I don't know. The Germans came and I hid. And then she burst into tears because she said, my daughter is gone. My granddaughter is gone. What am I doing here? I don't know what happened to her afterwards. But I have this picture in my front of my eyes. I think forever. Well, that evening, we got a message that although my grandmother and my aunt had been taken to the Umschlagplatz, there was a hospital, a Jewish hospital, which had been moved to a place adjoining, to a house adjoining the Umschlagplatz. And the director of that hospital saw my grandmother in the crowd, and he knew her well, because she was on the committees looking after the, I think it was the children, he was the director of the children, Jewish Children's Hospital, and she was very active always. And he got her out into the hospital. My aunt had gone. I don't think we slept that night, and my mother was absolutely determined that I had to be got out. The telephones were still working at that point in time. So she contacted her friend on the police side, and then it was arranged that I would leave with a work column. So I was dressed up in a long skirt and a scarf over my head and so on, and I was quite tall, so had a lot of clothes on me to pad me out. And in the morning, we went to join this, for me to join the column. My mother was determined to stay to see my grandmother and to make arrangements for her. Somehow, as I was standing in the column, suddenly I said, I am not going without you. Which caused a small commotion, and the people around us said, you know, the Germans will know this. And my mother, as she stood, joined the column with me. And I think I probably saved her life. We left. And I can't quite remember how, but then we separated ourselves from the column and went into a gate of another house to strip and make ourselves look presentable. And at that point, I think there were people following the column, because they knew it was a way of escaping. So that was the first time we were accosted and threatened, and my mother had to pay. We then went to the apartment of my old nanny, who had offered to look after us. But unfortunately, she was a very simple person, and when she took me to the market shopping, she started telling everybody here around that, isn't it wonderful, my little Barbara has been saved. When I came back and told my mother that we've got to leave, this is too dangerous. So we did, and we, I think at that point we went to Mrs. Vedetska, her apartment in Water Street, where we stayed for a few days, and then she arranged for us to go to the country, because we had no papers at that time, and nothing had been arranged. We stayed in a little boarding house somewhere outside Warsaw, but again, I don't remember where it was. One of the other people staying there was a priest, Father Patina, of the Catholic Action Caritas.
How do you spell his name?
P-A-W-L-I-N-A. He was there with a cousin of his. And we became friendly. I was a rather chatty little girl who knew a lot of poetry and liked reciting it. One of the poems which I loved was called Elmo Lerachny. It was by a Polish poet and talked of a Jewish wedding. And I found it a very, very moving poem. And I came out with this one. That evening or the next day, Father Tatina asked my mother if we were Jewish and if we were in Hungary. And my mother told him the truth. And he offered any help he could. He produced false papers for my mother and myself, which he got from the parish records of some parish in the country. And those papers belonged to dead people. The only problem was that the papers he produced for me in the name of Marianna Anishka, A-N-A-S-Z-K-A, the name was very peasanty. And I found it completely and utterly unacceptable, so that every time I had to introduce myself, I went through agonies of shame.